Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter, at Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, and neilhaley.com. And I'm honored to have on the program Jacqueline Bisset, celebrity actress. How are you, Jacqueline? And I know you're excited about your latest project, aren't you?
I am. I'm very, very well. I'm even up. I'm feeling quite lively at this time of the morning, and all is well.
All is well. Okay, let's talk about the last film festival. And what I think it's very, and a really an important film for you for a few reasons. Isn't that true, Jacqueline?
Actually, you're right. It is important to me. I don't know what reason you think it's important to me, but for me, it was because it's a comedy. I got to work with a really good group of people, and Dennis Hopper was somebody I admired a lot.
Yes,
and
that's
unfortunately, he died when we shot this, before we really finished with his role and all the follow-up that would have happened, you know, normally. So it's taken us a hell of a long time to get this film back on track, and the director worked incredibly hard. And we've given her lots of support, and finally it's come out. I just came back from Santa Fe, where we showed it at the film festival over the weekend, and very excited to have it out there. And I hope that, you know, as it's a small film, we need all the help we can get. We need, you know, it's not a big budget film with a great big push from behind. It's very independent, and it's very original, and I get to play this Italian diva, and he gets to play my ex-husband, and he, of course, has a new girlfriend, of course. She's only been away from me for a short time, but he has a new girlfriend, and there's all kinds of comedy.
Absolutely, Jacqueline. That's what I thought about was, again, Dennis Hopper. When I saw that, you know, you were co-starring with him and I knew that he had passed on, what a great way to have his memory live on, to be his final film and with you co-starring with him. And your memories of Dennis, right?
Well, yeah. Thank you. Well, it's very nice. I think actually we did have good chemistry. We didn't get to know each other very well, but there was something, we kind of, the way we ripped each other, it was good.
Was that the first time you ever worked with Dennis on a film?
Sorry?
Is that the first time you've worked with Dennis on a film? No, I said, Jacqueline, is that the first time you worked with Dennis on a film?
Yes, it's absolutely the first time. And in fact, you know, he had such a kooky character in terms of so many movies. I must say, I was almost intimidated by him in the beginning. I knew him as sort of an artist and everything, but I've seen many of those films where he played these crazy characters. But in real life, he lived differently. He was he was pretty calm at that point in his life, and he plays a role in this where he plays this frantically needy character in terms of he wants his film to be out there, and he'll do anything to get it out there. So that's why we end up in this really tacky film festival.
Absolutely, Jacqueline, and it's kind of really speaks to the world today, especially with these new film, everyone trying to get their film out there to film festivals, and to be turned down so many times and finally get that opportunity, right, Jacqueline? It's kind of definitely tells a story.
Well, that's the basic story.
Yeah, so I was saying
that's the premise of the piece.
Yeah, definitely. And so what I was saying, Jacqueline, is that
I can't hear you. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I was going to say to you, Jacqueline, we're talking about the same time. I apologize. I was saying that basically that the film in so many ways is speaking to lots of artists today, how they have to try to get their film to film festivals and get their film out there as a project. Don't you agree?
Yeah, it's absolutely. You know, so many films don't get distribution unless they get some festival activity first. You know, it's like the Sundance Festival and all those things are desperately important. In the film, the premise is that there's 4,000 film festivals in the world, and this film has been turned down by all of them. So we end up in this small town, and, you know, it's like the circus comes to town. We arrive.
And that sounds so funny. And think about how many actors go on so many auditions. That speaks to it as well, right? How they get turned down so many times when auditioning. The same thing that Dennis is dealing with.
Yeah, you've got to have a thick skin to get through this business to some degree.
Now, can you tell me?
There is a lot of rejection.
Yeah, so Jacqueline, how many auditions have you had in your life?
Oh,
That would be an unbelievable number compared to all the films you were in and movies and
TV. No, it hasn't been. Because when you become established, they don't ask you to audition often. Since the last 15 years, the auditioning process has come back more than it used to. When I first started, I used to audition. But then there was a period when I didn't audition because they kind of knew me and I was in the circuit. And then gradually, all the people who were running the studios and people, got younger and the people didn't know a lot of the actors and they started making them audition again. I don't have any problem with that, but some people do. I do. I think, I always look at it as a chance to get to know if I want to work with the people who are auditioning me. It's not a one-way street. It's a two-way street. They want to check you out and you want to check them out. That's the way I look at it.
Oh, absolutely.
I think it's...
Definitely. All right.
I don't see it as necessarily a negative.
No, I don't see it as a negative as well. Now, was that a fun film to work on, Jacqueline? Going back, how many years ago was this film?
It was a fun film. It was a fun film because there's a lot of it for improvisation, and I play this wild Italian diva who's a number. She's really a number. And that's fun. It's fun to be able to be funny and light and good chemistry with Dennis. Good chemistry.
It's definitely sounds like you have some definitely good chemistry from Dennis. Who else were have you? You guys went through the same process of getting this into film festivals as well, right, Jacqueline? This film.
Meaning, we haven't done that much yet, but we're hoping we will. I mean, there'll be that. It's going out now on VOD, video on demand. I don't know how many festivals we're going to want to. I'm sure we'd love to get it into festivals that are around the country, but I don't know which ones specifically. We missed the date for Sundance, and we didn't get. But it'll go probably in film festivals, outside the country too. I'm playing a character who speaks with a very strong accent, so I don't quite know how they'll translate that in when it goes to foreign countries. Quite how that will be dealt with, but. I'm sure it'll get out there eventually.
Well, especially fans of yours.
From my point of view, this is really a fun character. And I'm not just saying it because it's another film. It's, for me, it really was. I've been trying to do comedy for a long time. And I've tended to do dramatic pieces. And this is broad. This is broad comedy. And I love it.
Okay, Jacqueline, so it's available on VOD right now. So people can go check it out. And where can we find information on you, Jacqueline?
Find information on me. You can find me on Facebook.
Okay, awesome. Well, Jacqueline, I appreciate you calling. I really enjoyed the conversation, and best of luck with the film. And this definitely needs to live on. Two talented actors and actresses, and you and Dennis Hopper. People need to see the film. It sounds funny, and it really speaks to lots of people in Hollywood, what they have to go through on a daily basis. So thanks again for calling.
Thank you very, very much.
Take care, Jacqueline. Bye-bye. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. Bye-bye. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter at Total Tutor Neil S. Haley, Facebook, and neilhaley.com. And I'm so excited to welcome the program Dietrich Bader of American Housewife. We all know him as Napoleon Dynamite, on Napoleon Dynamite, The Drew Carey Show, Office Space, all those places. Dietrich, thanks for calling, and how are you?
Well, I'm really good. I'm really good, Neil. Thanks.
I'm doing fantastic. You know, when I think about your work, I just loved you and some of these shows, especially Drew Carey Show. Reminisce and bring us back that experience.
We had a good time on that show. It was like 9 years of fun.
And I'm sure that made you recognizable forever because of that show. Everyone's spotting you all the time.
Yeah,
because
that was a big show. It ran a nice long time.
Absolutely. And I think that this show is going to be the same thing when you talk about American Housewife. I mean, my wife cannot wait. We're going to put this on our DVR list because I'm telling you, it looks hilarious. And it's such a great, it really speaks to society.
I really feel like we're doing something really special and original. And it's tough to reinvent the wheel, a family show. But I feel like with the scripts and the star that we have, that we really have a chance at giving people a show that they feel is fresh and yet they can associate with.
That's so true. And thinking about, we think about American Housewife and we think about, the particulars of it. It's like so many women out there today trying to deal with family life, dealing with all these different things. And then yet they see other people around them that, might be thinner or younger, and the challenges that moms have to go through on a daily basis, for sure.
Oh, totally. Yeah, they feel judged because they are being judged. I mean, women are so tough on each other, and they love, like, judging each other. And with Katie being in an affluent community and not spending all day doing Pilates and yoga and spinning classes, you know, she's comfortable in her own body. And but she looks different from the rest of the women in the community, and they're always kind of looking down on her. I think only with her husband can she kind of let it show that she feels the pressure. But she's a strong and fierce individual and up for facing the task of being judged.
And this character you play is a little different than some of the other characters, wouldn't you agree? Because, again, you're more a little bit more grounded than you are in some of the other characters you've played in your career. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, totally. Yeah. You know, I've played a lot of really broad characters for a long time. Oswald, for example, I don't even know how that guy got a driver's license.
Right.
Pretty dumb, but fun to play, like a sweet little boy. But this guy is actually very close to me. I come from an academic family, and Greg is a professor, and I have a kind of wry, dry sense of humor, and so does Greg. These writers are really fabulous in picking up little details. It's funny when we go out to lunch together. I realize that they're totally using me. Wringing me dry and then absorbing everything like a sponge so that they can then put it in the show.
And that's so true. And I laugh about that because some of the scenarios, one is I just got 8.5 hours sleep. I've watched just some of the clips. And then my wife had, and your wife had all the kids in the bed. I deal with this on a daily basis, Dietrich. I have 5 kids of my own, and my wife, I finally decide to go sleep on the couch and have a sound night's sleep. My wife gets back up, and she's like, I'm exhausted. I got 2 hours sleep. These scenarios really happen in family life.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, you know, Greg sleeps through everything, and the kids, one after another, come in, and Katie is just completely exhausted. And you have to go through the rest of your day. That's what's so nuts. People don't realize how crazy you are at that exact moment because you're just at the end of your rope. And I know moms have to deal with this all the time. Tonight's episode is really, really funny in that way, that they can completely associate with this life. I mean, I remember going in when my kid was just unbelievably sick and we had to deal with them all night. Going in to do CSI Miami as a guest star, and I actually had not slept at all. And I felt that by the end of the day, I was losing my mind. I didn't even know if I was speaking English anymore because I was losing it. And yet, somehow, you get through the day, and if you watch it on television, hopefully you won't be able to tell. And then I came home, I had dinner, I went to bed, and everything was fine. And you got to come. You know, you got to go day after day after day, and it's that clash of what you thought life would be like,
right,
and what it ends up being, and how to round it out so that you're actually happy and fulfilled, and that's a lot of what tonight's episode is about.
And that's so true. And think about it. I mean, I the way I deal with my kids. I mean, when they were born first, I got no sleep. And I had to go to work, deal with all these different things and all that. But I think that there's so many water cooler conversations that moms and dads can have after watching this show, specific things like about the Halloween candy. I get a kick out of that whole thing as well, Dietrich. That was probably in another episode, because I'm just watching clips so far. But come on now. We all know when we have the Halloween candy out right at the beginning of October, it ends up disappearing. We put on 10 pounds, all of us, right?
I know. And the kids think we're hiding it, but really we're hiding it in our lower intestine.
And then the kids are like, what happened? And then I'm sure when we go and grab the other stuff. And I think that I also cracked up when you're on the potty and you're in the bathroom and then mom sends you up for the homework. I mean, when I saw these clips, I said, this is going to be a great show, just even before it premiered. And I'm so glad that you have this opportunity to get back in the sitcom route like the Drew Carey Show. You know, you've done so many unbelievable, supporting roles in movies, get you back and that whole thing.
Thanks.
And then I was reading up also, you did Veep as well, didn't you? I didn't know that you were part of Veep.
Yeah, I did a full season of Veep a couple of years ago. and then 3 episodes last season, and I think they're going to bring me back for a couple episodes this season, but I'm not sure. It just depends on the schedule, because they've already started shooting, and our shooting is sort of overlapping.
So you were pretty impressed by Veep winning awards and stuff. That was a pretty exciting thing.
Yeah, no, Julia is great and deserves every award. She is really a fabulous actress and a really nice person. It's a great show to work on. Really, really nice cast, and it's a very smart show. It's very well written. The production is it's a lovely production to be a part of. And it shoots here in Los Angeles. It used to shoot in Baltimore, which made it harder because I was out of town, but away from my kids, and I didn't like that very much.
Also, what I like, Dietrich, about Tuesday nights, you have a great lineup on Tuesday nights to jump in to begin. I mean, to think about Fresh.
Yeah, totally. Patty Show.
Yeah.
And then Fresh Off the Boat after us. We really have a nice night to tune in, because it's just a great lineup of family shows.
Comedy night, Tuesday nights. I mean, you put The Middle, Yourselves, Fresh Off the Boat, and then The Real O'Neills, and you have a lot of funny comedy, because we all know what we deal with, Dietrich, on Tuesday nights. It's like, oh my gosh, we woke up Monday ready to go to work, and then Tuesday comes, and they're like, is it time for the weekend yet? Then you just say, okay, let's sit down.
You've got a long way to go.
You sit down right in front of the television, say, hey, here it is. And I think it's going to be very, very successful Tuesday nights. Where's the best place we can find information on you? And again, to tune in tonight at 8:30 p.m. Eastern to American Housewife. But where can we find info on you?
Well, I'm on Twitter at Bader Dietrich. And I think there's a lower dash below between Bader and Dietrich. The IMDb page is pretty current. That's the website that tracks people's showbiz careers. But really, Twitter is probably the best way.
I'm telling you, I spot great comedies, and I know this is going to be fantastic. When I heard that you were doing this tour, I said, oh my gosh, I got it. The show continues to have success, and thanks again for calling, man.
Thank you very much.
All right, take care, Dietrich. See ya. Okay, bye. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.
I'm so excited to welcome the program rap legend Too Short. Too Short, thanks for calling. And I'm telling you, I was such a huge fan of you growing up. I think you have a rap voice unlike anyone else, for sure.
Well, I'm fortunate enough to also in the world of hip hop, where we now notice that popular artists are being duplicated. people try to sound like them, they try to dress like them. I've never really had anybody jump on my coattail like that, so that was fortunate.
Yeah, absolutely. And what tell us how you developed that style of rap.
Well, in the early days, every rapper had to be extremely individual. Nothing about you could be anything like anybody else. So you were instantly discredited and pushed to the side. So I developed a style, man, where I was listening to different rappers and how everybody's style was evolving. And I went in the direction of keep it really kind of simple. Don't try to be like, super rapping, wordy and stuff. People were doing that and they were great at it. I wanted people to hear what I was saying. And I was more or less trying to be like an instrument in the music where you just kind of fit in the track instead of dominating the track, like, listen to my words, I'm spitting bars and I'm rapping it up. I was like, nah, let me just say some really cool, slick stuff that people want to hear. Make sure the bass is really loud and, bass lines are funky. And my formula has always been the funk that I was raised on, George Clinton, Parliament Funkadelic, James Brown, the funk. And I more or less catered to the music with my voice instead of just, like, rapping over some drums or something. So I think people enjoyed the simplistic style of Too Short and didn't expect me to be like, he's the best rapper ever. It was just like, I love listening to Too Short. Good music.
And that's so true, Too Short. And I think that that's where it was. But again, you just had that certain style and that certain ability, and you got caught up in a very interesting time in rap, didn't you? For sure. And with the East Coast, West Coast, for sure.
Well, yeah, that was, you had to, you were supposed to pick sides. I'm from California, I'm from New York, who do I like better? But I was the guy back then who I just told everybody involved, I'm like, man, this is, I clearly see what this is. This is more of a Puff Daddy, Suge Knight type of thing. With, you know, Suge Knight had Tupac all riled up. He had a, you know, he went through some stuff, being shot and robbed and going to jail in New York. So he was really, really bitter, and he was the one who was feeling it, and Suge was allowing him to, giving him the platform to do it. But I was sitting there looking at it realistically, saying to myself, you know, I do a lot of business in New York. I have a lot of friends in New York. I'm not getting ready to sit here and go, I'm from California, I hate everybody in New York now. I was, you know, I was in New York a lot during that time, and I was working with people like Biggie and Jay-Z and Lil' Kim and Eric Sermon, and you know, the sentiment outside of the so-called, we say so-called because it never really was, so-called East Coast, West Coast war was just, it was kind of like a, it was clear that it was a Bad Boy Death Row thing. And then in the end, when it got too real, and 6 months apart, we lost Tupac and Biggie, I think everybody just woke up and realized this is just going too far, and they backed off of it.
And it stopped. And the rivalries were just because of just how it just developed, and how and it was a lot of he said, she said type thing, and then it just blew up for sure in that time. But Too Short, you've been recognized with a lot of honors, haven't you, in, from your career? And I'm sure you're happy about that as well as in hip-hop and stuff. Wouldn't you agree?
I've done dozens of collaborations with great artists who kind of intimidate you when you get in the studio with them. And they in the process of working with an artist like Notorious B.I.G., you got to get in that room and you got to do your best work. And I think that's the best part of collaborations, is they bring out the best in you. So I've went toe-to-toe with some heavyweights and came out with some classics.
You definitely did. Now you're trying to go in a round that I started 7 years ago when I started on one radio station and have gone to 120, where you have a podcast, where now you're taking on my role. So tell me this process of developing your podcast, Radio One Podcast.
Well, I'm just giving you another insight. I've never really let people tap into the personal Too Short. Not a lot. You know, you get some interviews here and there. I'm not really super mega publicist kind of guy, so there's been a sort of you see me out a lot, but not, I'm just not all in your face like that. So I think that kind of letting people tap into my world a little more is good timing for that right now. I got a lot of music that I've been recording over the years, and since I've been back independent, not on Jive Records, and I'm not trying to sign to any major labels ever, I got a lot of music. I just, you know, I want to creep into my show and let people hear the music I've been working with other artists. Every time you listen to the show, you're going to hear these great songs that you've never heard anywhere in the world. And basically, we keep it funny and we talk about interesting things, man. And the bottom line to the whole show is just the ingredients of success. We just want to know, what does it feel like? What did it take to achieve it, and what's needed to maintain it, you know, success.
And who are some upcoming guests that you're going to have on?
Upcoming guests. We've already done Ice Cube. Snoop Dogg is up and available right now. G-Eazy is going up next. And up and coming, I got Russell Simmons coming over. I got Anthony Anderson coming over pretty soon. Craig Robinson is going to come over. I'm going to tap into a lot of my sports buddies and get them through. I just did K-Camp the other day. And, you know, it's a lot. It's a lot going on. The guests that we're lining up are everywhere from comedians, actors, internet influencers, rappers, singers. I just want to talk about success. At some point, I'm bringing on even people who aren't in the entertainment industry, who just are interesting people, who are friends of mine, who are very successful, and just give you those ingredients.
Yeah, and that's true, success, and that's what you want to do in your podcast. And your co-host, Bobby Loco, tell us a little about him and how you guys decided to do this together.
Well, we have a independent label that we run, the boombox, and in the midst of breaking out our new artists and our production team and the things we're doing around here at the new facility, we decided the podcast would be a good addition, you know? So it's like you could have a reality show or something, whatever you think it is, music projects, whatever, but we decided the podcast was a good outlet to let people hear the music, hear what's going on, and just keep you informed. Yeah. So I'm going to do this every week for a long, long, long time. It's really good now, but it's going to get better. And, you know, we're going to see what direction it goes in and how big it gets. But at the same time, just expect a good hour and a half journey of laughs, music, information, really, really good show.
Fantastic. Okay, so where can we listen to the podcast and all that and find information on you, Too Short? Where can we go?
You can get the Podcast One app. You can go to podcastone.com, or you can go to iTunes. And just make sure when you search it, you put the dollar sign for the word S. Too Short for the letter S. Use the dollar sign.
Okay, we will do that. Dollar bills, right? Exactly, for sure. So thanks, Too Short, for calling, man. Take care, and best of luck on your show, okay?
Thanks, guys.
Take care, man. Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter, at Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, and also neilhaley.com, and much, much more. And I'm really excited to welcome the program celebrity athlete Gabrielle Reese, model, everything. Gabrielle, thanks for calling, and thanks for taking the time today to come on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, it's so interesting. I was looking into we're going to talk about your podcast, but you look at your career, and it kind of relates a lot to what kind of conversations you're going to have on your show. The struggles you had to go through to be a successful professional athlete, to a model, to a host. You went through a lot of different things in your career to go to where you are today. Am I correct?
Yeah, I think it's like everyone. You know, if you live a few years, you probably do a couple different things and hopefully learn a lot, and then you realize how much you don't know.
Right. And you learn from that process. And how you did you always want to be a professional athlete? Was that something growing up you wanted to do?
You know, that's I think one of the most for me, the biggest surprise of my life growing up was that I went, first of all, to college on a scholarship, and then I went on to play professionally. I had no sense of that even at 15 years old. So by 11th grade, I wasn't even connected to that dream. Just the way that my road took me. And I think that was, you know, sort of one of the most impactful things that ever happened to me. And, but no, I didn't grow up. You know, I know Carrie Walsh very well, and I'm I think it was sort of always in her mind. And I know I have a lot of friends and peers that they kind of had that drive and knew early. I didn't.
And you definitely led the way for Carrie Walsh and all the others in success in that sport. Do you agree, Gabrielle? Being one of
You know, I have to be honest, there was a group right before me that kind of built the platform, and then I got to capitalize on the platform. So we had athletes like St. John Smith and Randy Stoklis and some on the male side and some athletes on the female side that they kind of got the platform where it was. And then when I came in and the athletes and I, we got to really benefit because it was already built. Building it's the hardest part.
Right. It's definitely.
I had good timing.
Good timing. And then how did you kind of, you stretch from sports to hosting and modeling? Did it all just come through the success you had as a professional athlete? Did people come to you, or did you strive for those opportunities?
Well, what happened is when I was playing college ball, I had gotten the opportunity to model prior to going to college, and then I waited. And then my second year of competing, I gave up my scholarship because of NCAA rules about making money and being on scholarship. So I modeled all throughout playing for Florida State. And then once I turned professional, I actually stopped modeling, but I kind of used all the stuff I learned in that business for that sort of next image part. And that's when I started doing television and writing and doing other things, because quite frankly, my sport was and is so small that I was trying to look at things that I was interested in and thought, well, maybe I could do that job, because the sport really wasn't big enough to sustain you, not really.
And it's changed dramatically since the time you've retired and where it is today. It's just unbelievable, right, Gabrielle? You never thought that it would become what it is. In a way.
I mean, I think it's great, but any of the athletes will tell you that it, you know, and during the Olympics, it's you know, so well showcased, and you have such great athletes like Misty May and Kerry Walsh that really elevated the status of it. But the problem is it's still, unless you're sort of a top four or five team,
right,
you probably are doing a side hustle.
Which all of us are doing, I think, in Hollywood to everywhere in between. And now, why a podcast, Gabrielle? And I think that you talk about your inner struggles and how you challenged yourself all the way to be as successful as you are today. And that's has a lot to do with you and your co-host really talking about how people deal with challenges and fears and how they overcome things, right?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, I started, we have my husband, he's an athlete, his name is Lord Hamilton, and we have people come to our house every week, several days a week, that friends and peers and such that come and train at our house. And we have a 10-seat sauna. It runs about 220 degrees. Well, next to it, we have ice tubs. And so what we started seeing over the years was that the conversations were the best inside the barrel. Like, I don't know if it's because you're in your bathing suit and you're hot. And
right.
And then what you start to see is we have all these people, retired professional athletes, present-day professional athletes, actors, writers, all different types of people. And the conversations really were always the same. They were about our families or about aging or something that we were afraid of or something like that. So when I was approached to do the podcast, and we started calling the sauna the Truth Barrel, Neil Strauss was coming to my house, and he's a writer and a very, you know, very bright guy. And I was in the barrel a lot with Neil, and I thought, here's a guy who wrote a book called The Game, and then he wrote a book called The Truth.
Right.
He writes for Rolling Stones. We kind of live in really different worlds. And really our conversations were navigating a lot of the same things. And so I thought it was an interesting way to connect with people.
I definitely do as well. What I'm so excited about is where podcasts are going. And, you know, you and I only have 8 minutes, but if you and I could chat for an hour, what a conversation will we have, you know, about and share back and forth with each other our challenges in life and to where we became and where we go. And that's what's so cool when you interview people, right, and discuss these topics, is you can go into a lot more detail in a podcasting format, right?
You can, and it's a little bit sneaky, too, because you almost feel, you almost forget. Like on radio, it's even a little more like, okay, you're on go. And even television is another level higher of that. But something about a podcast, all of a sudden, it can get very intimate, and you do have that time. But you have to be careful that you're not a bore either. And that's what Neil's good at. He's like, okay, move it along. Because I can get stuck in, oh, that's so interesting. And I know he's like, yeah, no, that's not interesting. So I think it's, to your point, it can be a really great opened up conversation. But you do have to remember that if people are listening, nobody's that interesting. So keep it moving and kind of get on the topic and get into the topic. It's a great format.
You're able to, in a lot of ways, and that's where I'm is, get it moving to the next thing. So I'm interested in a lot of times through preparation is what your listeners are interested in. And that's the important thing. What kind of guests are we going to expect on the show? Is it going to be more conversation style topics, or are we going to have guests as well?
Oh, no, so far, the ones we've done, we have all guests. We had Larry Miller. He's a comedian, actor with a L.A. Times writer. That show was about two gentlemen that both had near-death experiences, very different.
Right.
What they went through, what they learned, how they got through it. People who do very dangerous things and how they prepare for that, how they use fear. We'll have parenting experts. We will have relationship experts.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So our whole thing is, Neil and I, we joke, this is all about us, right? Like, we've got questions and we need information because Neil has a young child. I have three daughters. I've been with my husband many years, and we're just, you know, we're just trying to navigate it and distill it down and sort of say, hey, can we offer one takeaway? Can we make it entertaining and humanize it? Because when you start to realize at some point, I feel like people are afraid to have real conversations because it is it's a kind of tougher world where everyone is chiming in, so everyone's sitting on the fence a little more. I feel like, why can't we really get into it and really talk about it? Because then other people will be like, yeah, that's how I feel.
And that's what I love when I have experts on. I start asking questions. Of all the interviews I've done in my career, which is like in the 3,000 plus range in 7 years or 4,000. That's why I love guests. Oh my gosh. If you would see my list just of celebrities alone, it's an unbelievable list, but also just experts and just learning from them. That's what's the fun thing. I think I learned from Larry King in that way. Larry King wants to learn about people, and that's what made him so successful. So, Gabrielle, where's the best place? Again, Podcast One is where it's available, but where can we find information on you as well?
And iTunes.
iTunes.
And it's The Truth Barrel with myself, Gabby Reese, and Neil Strauss, or I'm on Instagram and Twitter at Gabby Reese, GABBYREECE. And, for me, I also feel like it's like you saying when you do these interviews, you're also, you know, the fact that you try to put something out there that maybe is towards good.
Yes.
You know, like not just.
Not fluff.
You know, rambling.
Yeah.
That's the hope. And sometimes we're going to succeed and sometimes we're not, but that is the hope.
As an educator, that's what I want to do. I want to ask questions, learn about why, what makes you passionate. I'm not going to ask fluff questions like, what did you have for breakfast today, Gabby? What's the weather like? That's not enough, time. So thanks again for calling. Take care and best of luck with your podcast.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. See you. Okay. Bye-bye.
Aloha. Bye.
Aloha. Bye. You're listening to Total Celebrities Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.
So I'm excited to welcome the program horror star Bill Moseley of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And much, much more. Bill, thanks for calling. And it's your favorite time of year, isn't it, Halloween?
You know, I love it. It's a lot of fun. I live in Los Angeles, so it cools off a little bit. And, I do like Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, so they're free this time of year. And, of course, it's a celebration of monsters, and there's plenty of them here in Los Angeles.
Absolutely. So is it crazy in L.A. on Halloween?
It does get crazy. I usually stay in. I know it's kind of a, it sounds like a wet noodle, but I stay in and I consider it amateur night. So, you know, I stay home. A lot of crazy drivers and, I just generally, chill out.
All right, so let's kind of go into, I want the story of how you became a horror star. Give us that story where you got your break and stuff.
I actually was always a horror movie fan, and I had watched the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I think back in 1976, maybe, and, it really freaked me out, and I was actually working on a ranch in Wyoming one summer. I think it was the summer of 78 or something like that. And I actually was working next to a kid that was just, would go into these crazy, he drank a lot of Mellow Yellow, and so he would go into these crazy rants. And one of them, at one point, he just suddenly blurted out, Texas Chainsaw Manicure. And I heard that. I went back to the bunkhouse, since it was a ranch, and I wrote out a five-minute scenario about a woman who goes to a beauty parlor, gets her hair done, wants to get her, nails manicured, and out from the back comes Leatherface and gives her a manicure with a chainsaw. And so I wrote that out, and I went back to New York City where I was living, and made the Texas Chainsaw Manicure. At the very end, the woman, she passes out from fright, and then when she comes to, she looks down and she realizes she's gotten a fabulous manicure. So, and she goes out and shows her husband, played by me, driving a pickup truck, dressed like Ed Neal from the original Texas Chainsaw as the hitchhiker. And she goes, "Look, honey, I got the best manicure ever." And I go, "Hey, that's great, honey. We should celebrate with some head cheese." And so, I actually got a copy of the manicure to Toby Hooper, who directed the original Chainsaw. And when he was actually, when he did the Chainsaw 2 back in 1986, he remembered me from the Chainsaw manicure and hired me to play the character Chop Top with my little head plate, my coat hanger, and sketchy, crazy dude, all based on my cameo in the Texas Chainsaw manicure. And after that, 30 years later, I think this is our 30th anniversary of Chainsaw 2, and I'm still going strong.
Wow, Bill, I got a little story. I'm 43, and I saw the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but how crazy that movie was, even though it got such promotion, the rate. I wasn't allowed to see it when I was 13, so I've still never seen that. I saw the first one, never saw the one you were in. Isn't that amazing? Because somehow
amazing.
My family's like, yeah. Because that's crazy, that movie, right?
Yeah, that's crazy. Well, check it out, man. Maybe that's you can treat yourself this Halloween to Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. I know it's just come out. There's a real nice Blu-ray from a company called Scream Factory. It's got a bunch of DVD extras, and it's a real nice Blu-ray. So maybe treat yourself.
Absolutely.
Or treat yourself.
I'll definitely. So from there, you became a horror star, right? After that opportunity,
I did a good job in Chainsaw 2, and one of the special effects makeup artists for Chainsaw 2 is a guy named Tom Savini, who is considered the king of splatter makeup. I mean, he really turned around the genre with his incredible special effects makeup. And Tom, after Chainsaw 2, was a great buddy of George Romero and ended up directing the remake of Night of the Living Dead, the color remake,
wow,
back in 1990. And so that actually, and Tom hired me just because we'd become friends on the set of Chainsaw 2 to play the character Johnny, which is a short-lived character, I might add, but... I get to say, at least when I'm at the very beginning of Night of the Living Dead, I'm in the cemetery with my sister. We're going to visit our mother's grave, and I try to get spooky with my sister, and I go, "They're coming to get you, Barbara," and my Boris Karloff accent. So, that was my next big horror movie. And from there, I did Army of Darkness with Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell. That was Evil Dead basically, and just kept going, and finally ended up meeting a guy named Rob Zombie I think it was October of 99, and
wow,
met Rob, and Rob hired me as Otis in a movie that his first movie called House of a Thousand Corpses. And after that, that was so popular that we did a sequel called The Devil's Rejects, and I reprised my character as Otis. And then after that, I worked with a guy, a director named Darren Bousman, who did at least three or four of the Saw movies. And he'd had his great passion was to do a horror opera. So I ended up singing and dancing in a movie called Repo, the Genetic Opera. So I've just been rolling along.
Now, Bill, my take is, let's talk about the days of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Your direction in horror is different than, I guess, the teeny bopper direction. Horror people rejected the newer horror films, meaning the ones that are just the scary films that go to the theaters, and have gone towards the direction of what was successful in your time, meaning the Texas Chainsaw Massacres, Freddy, Jason. It seemed like that the horror people all decided, we're tired of what's going on. We'll go with the Night of the Living Dead and change our whole direction in certain ways, and go and be our own stuff instead of allowing the other people to call the shots that were unrealistic and not very good horror films. Am I right? The whore community kind of rebelled against the newer generation. Would you agree?
You know, I think so. I think what's happened is that some of the special effects makeup has gotten so convincing and realistic that a lot of horror has gotten pretty gnarly, in the sense that it is it just looks like you're watching like an autopsy, you know, with some scary music. And I think what's happened is people are hearkening back to the horror heroes, like the Freddy Kruegers and Jason from Friday the 13th, Michael Myers from Halloween.
Absolutely,
the horror characters, and I think that's actually what people are in search of. And I go to a lot of this time of year. I go to a lot of horror conventions around the country, and actually, in a couple of weeks, I'm going to Germany for one. People still seem to be really excited about meeting guys again, like Robert Englund, who played Freddy, me with Chop Top and Otis, and Kane Hodder, my buddy who does who did the Friday the 13th, Jason.
Yeah, he was on my show last week.
That does seem to be the thing that people are looking for. It's like a big horror hero like that.
Exactly. All right, Bill, a place we can find information on you, because I know I got to let you go. I could talk for you for hours. A place where we can find information on you and also latest project. Where can we go to find all that info?
Yes. I have a website, which is choptopsbbq.com, choptopsbbq.com. And then I'm on social media, and it's at choptopmosley, M-O-S-E-L-E-Y. So I'm on Twitter and Facebook and all that kind of stuff. The next project coming up is I'm doing a movie called Crepitus, which is C-R-E-P-I-T-U-S, and I play a scary, crackling clown, apes like everybody else, in Michigan. I shoot that in January in the Upper Peninsula, so I'm going to pack some long johns. I'll be a scary, chilly clown.
All right. Well, Bill, happy Halloween. Thanks for calling, man, and take care.
Well, thank you very much. Happy Halloween to you, and remember to X-ray your candy.
I will. You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter, at Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, Google+, and also on Periscope, at Total Tutor, and I'm excited to welcome the program. Relationships expert for the show, What to Text Him Back on ABC.com, Matthew Hussey. Matthew, thanks for calling. How are you?
I'm great, Neil. How are you?
Fantastic. Now, you know what's interesting, Matthew, when you think about relationships in general, how things have changed in the last, let's say, 10 years. It's just, it's unbelievable, isn't it? How people connect and compared to, yeah.
It is. We've got so many new ways of talking to people and meeting people, and it's given us an enormous amount of breadth in terms of the amount of people we meet, but we're losing the depth in the way we connect with people.
We're definitely losing the way we how we connect with people. Is it because more and more people don't really have real relationships? They have online relationships. They have text message relationships. No one's going to the bars really to meet somebody as much anymore as just. I wonder if the bars are empty now for relationships, Matthew. Are they all in just chat rooms and different things?
Well, I think we haven't replaced the bar scene as a place that people like to go, but I think we've certainly. The bar scene has become a place where people are in some way less practiced at approaching each other and talking to each other. They know that they can get their little jolt of validation from going to their phone and texting somebody and getting some feedback there instead of having to talk to somebody who's across the room. And that's not a great thing for having being able to meet people in person. But what I do think is that the opportunity now is so much greater because as a man or a woman, if you can approach someone, if you can be charming, if you can talk to them and have a real conversation in person, you are now somebody who really stands out. The art is being lost amongst the masses, and it gives us an incredible opportunity to shine for those who know how to do it.
So, Matthew, it's hard always for me to talk about. I have five kids of my own. I'm married, so looking at the dating scene, but I'm looking back at 43 and saying, oh, that was a long time ago. But I could imagine that phones are pulled out all the times at bars now, Matthew, right? And different things, and selfies are being taken. And as you said, the art of approaching somebody, especially as a man who's living on that phone, they don't know how to approach a woman and talk to them and stuff like that. And that's what this part of this show is about, to teach people these how to really break down relationships, right?
Well, that's absolutely right. You know, each focuses on 10 different episodes, where each episode is designed to deal with a common scenario that people face. So, for example, a woman who says, I'm on a dating app, he's texting me, he's texted me for the last 2 months, and he hasn't actually asked me out.
What
can I send him that might make it more likely that he'll ask me out? It's those types of scenarios that we're dealing with here.
That's got to be difficult for a woman to do that in a lot of ways, Matthew, to have to initiate. Why are men not figuring out these clues as much anymore?
Well, whether or not it's because they're not figuring out clues or because they simply have this buffet of options, people have become more disposable. And, you know, a man is getting his validation from his bedroom texting somebody and isn't having to put in the effort to actually go out, which represents effort. And ironically, it's the woman right now who has a higher standard, who makes herself a little more challenging. She's the one that's going to get the better attention from guys. So, for example, if a woman were to send a message to someone saying, I noticed you love texting. And the man said in response, how do you mean? And she says, we never actually talk. We only text. We're like pen pals. Well, no man wants to be a woman's pen pal. It's not sexy. It makes him feel like a teenage boy, not a man. And he now wants to rebel against that image that he's been given. So if she then says, I'm back after work. You should give me a call so I can hear your voice. Now she's made it a positive thing. I want to hear your voice. The insinuation is you're sexier on the phone than you are by message, by text. So now when they do speak, she can leave the phone call and say, it was so great speaking to you. It's always such a pleasure hearing your voice. Now what she's really doing is, and which is what most people are not doing today, is she's really training this person to like the thing that she wants him to do, i.e. meeting up in person or calling, and creating more of a negative stereotype around the thing that she doesn't want him to do. And none of this is really manipulative. It's just the truth. You know, yeah. Women do find it sexier when a guy actually gives them a call. So it's just about understanding how to communicate with the opposite sex and doing it 10% better than everybody else is doing it. And that's what my show, What to Text Him Back, is all about.
Okay, so everything is a different scenario. I bet you the one scenario, Matthew, that's out there is when you see the bubble, you know, when you're waiting for a text to be received back and it doesn't come back with an answer. What to do, right, Matthew? I'm sure that was...
When you see that they're typing stuff, when you see that they're typing something, but then nothing comes back.
Yeah.
Yeah, a very frustrating scenario. The thing I always say to people is, why are you even in that situation where you're sitting there on your phone watching for somebody to text back in the first place? Why are you not living your life and being present with whoever it is that's around you and whatever it is that's going on? Because either you're at coffee with someone right now and you're ignoring them by watching that bubble, or you're not with anybody and you're ignoring all the strangers around you who are real potential for you to speak to and have an interesting interaction with. We will only meet people if we start looking up. And ironically, even though this is a show that's about texting, it's called What to Text Him Back. Ironically, the idea of this show is to get people off of texting and into real life. So it's not training people to text better so that they can text more. It's so that they can text less.
I just don't understand it. I guess I don't know, Matthew. You think that it's easier now to communicate with women or harder now than when I was in my 20s?
I think it's become seemingly more complex to people when in fact it's actually a lot simpler. The old ways still work. If you are charming, if you understand what it is to be charismatic and attractive, and you know how to be an incredible presence on a date and when you're with somebody, then you will win. It's the people that have become addicted to the video game of texting, of apps, of online dating, and have bought into the frame of reference that everybody is now disposable. They're the people that are going to lose.
They are. And how excited are you about this platform on ABC.com to have all your shows? That's fantastic.
It's terrific. And, you know, the nice thing about the show is I think we've become so used to shorthand content that we can digest quickly and carry on with our lives. And that's the way this show is developed, is every episode is 5 to 10 minutes. So they're really short, punchy episodes. And this isn't just a show where you'll be entertained. I mean, you literally will hear the most common questions you have about dating. What do I do when he sends something too sexual? What do I do if he texts and never calls? How do I get him to actually ask me out on a date? What do I do if after a date he doesn't text me? All of those questions we answer episode by episode, and not just in a theoretical way, but we literally give people exact copy and paste text messages that they can use to send to someone today. So I'd encourage people to go to the app and just even look for the one episode that stands out for them, because they'll be able to use it immediately.
That's fantastic. And any other news for you, Matthew? I guess after this is a more big things coming up. So you got to go check you out as well, right, Matthew, for all the projects you have going on.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd encourage people to check me out. You know, we do YouTube videos every week, and, you know, we're always furthering the conversation about dating, and you know, it's always coming from a loving place. But people really, you know, we've built an incredible community of women who love hearing everything that we have to say and find it very, very helpful. And, you know, I'd encourage anyone who's struggling in their dating life right now or feels lonely to just come and check us out. My name's Matthew Hussey, for anyone who doesn't know. But come check us out, because I guarantee by watching what we have, you'll feel less alone and more encouraged in this area of your life.
So Matthew has Hussey.com for more information. Also, we can follow you on social media as well, right?
That's absolutely right. Google my name, you'll find me.
All right. Well, Matthew, thanks for calling. Definitely an interesting thing. I'll have those conversations with my younger friends about your show and stuff. And best of luck with all your ventures. So thanks for calling.
Neil, thank you so much for having me.
Take care, Matthew. See you later. Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.